Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your alternative talk radio contact, the planet, KGRARadio.com.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Into the Fray. Before we get to my chat with John Olson on his new book, Stranger US, which, by the way, we only touched on a small, little teeny tiny portion of what is in that book. I think there's nearly 30 perfectly creepy paranormal stories for you guys to enjoy. So before we get to that, though, I want to say hello and welcome and a thank you to my new patrons over at patreon.com. Hello to Karen, Robert, Chris, Shara, Matthew, Lynn, Scott, Tony, Ryan, Kit, Aaron, William, John, and last but not least, Ron. So guys, welcome to the team. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon, head on over to patreon.com and search Into the Fray. And now to my chat with John Olson. Well, John, we are here, of course, to talk about your fourth book that is now out. It is titled Stranger US, and you, of course, have been on ITF before. Episode 99, we covered your first book, Stranger Bridgerland. Episode 151 was Beyond Stranger Bridgerland. And, of course, episode 202 was Stranger West. Everyone can get those on Amazon now, of course. And Stranger US, I had a really difficult time narrowing down stories to cover on this episode because we're talking about, I mean, kind of like a Wendigo type creatures to Bigfoot, shadow people, skinwalkers, hauntings. And we will talk about one or two of these today, but some of my favorites are, like I've said many times, very difficult to classify ones. And there are a ton of those in your book. So how did you feel about this book? I mean, was it kind of like you had to, much like myself, you had a whole bunch to narrow down to choose what you put in this?
Yeah, it was a lot of, you know, narrowing it down to the ones that that I thought would fit really well. And I still have a ton that I'm working on. I'm hopefully going to do another book, but these were ones that stuck out to me and some of my favorite ones. And it was just nice to be able to share these.
Yeah, and I mentioned to you over text that I just fell in love with the chapter illustrations. And I don't know if you're name dropping her or you wanted to say something about that, but the drawings are incredible.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that is actually my wife's niece, Kate Walker. She did an amazing job with all of the pictures. She's just an amazing artist, and you know, she just took my ideas. I basically would give her the story, and her and her mother would read through it and then go from there and draw the pictures. So like I said, she did just an amazing job.
Yeah, when I got to the water baby chapter, I'm going, I haven't even read this yet, but I already know this is on my no list because of the illustration. I'm like, oh no.
Right. Right. That was really good.
It's good, very fitting. It's a perfect precursor to what's coming. So, and of course, you know, John, for people that don't know you, you're not just a collector of stories. You have your own personal encounters because you grew up it was like 100-plus-year-old home in Utah, right? That was very active, and that's what got you into this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I grew up in it was over 100 years old, and it was very active growing up. And at the time, my parents were very adamant that we don't talk about it. So I kind of, at the first, turned to, you know, books and television shows to learn everything I could about the paranormal, just because of the experiences that I had in the house with the ghost that was in our house, just piqued my interest and I explored everything I could about it. And then later on, when I was able to share my stories, by the time I was 17, I found that the more I shared my stories, people would come to me with their stories. And I decided at that point that I was going to start collecting stories and that someday I would, you know, start writing books. And luckily I've been able to do that. But the home that I grew up in, even to today, my parents still live there and they still have experiences there. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Before you get into the stories in the book, you touch back on some of those experiences. And as I was reading through there, one of the creepier ones is your daughter, of course, went to stay with Grandma Grandpa at that same house and spend the night. And there was like this night where there was, you know, whispering and shadows and all this stuff going on. And I'm just thinking, man, that house just hasn't died down a bit.
No, it goes up and down. You know, there'll be a couple months where it's really active and then a couple months where they don't hear anything. But very often my parents will call me and say, oh, I got to tell you what happened yesterday, or I got to tell you what happened the other day. But yeah, with my daughter, she was sleeping on Grandma and Grandpa's couch and woke up to a small figure on the couch, the other couch, just away from her. And she woke up and it jumped up and ran across the room. And the living room is just above the entranceway room, I guess. So there's two stairs into it. And she heard it run across and jump off the step and hear it hit and run. And that kind of stuff isn't very uncommon to happen in the house. So it's really kind of an interesting home for sure.
Isn't it interesting that beings that we're assuming are kind of, you know, maybe from another plane, if that's the easiest, you know, way to explain it, that they actually still make noise when they run, that they can hear them pitter-patter and run down the stairs and things like that?
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of strange the things that they're able to interact with and you know, how exactly, you know, are we hearing that? It's all really fascinating to me how the interaction happens, because in this home where my parents live, anything can happen from, you know, the ghost will mimic people's voices to hearing things, you know, move and, you know, just anything like that, footsteps. It's just amazing to me that there's that much interaction going on.
Yeah. And we'll say this one for the readers, but it was so cool how at one point you got so used to things that, you know, you would hear someone's voice and then just decide that until you actually saw that person, you would just assume that it was the ghost mimicking that person coming in the house.
Right. Yep. Kind of a fool me once.
Yeah.
Shame on me kind of, or shame on you kind of a thing. So yeah, definitely.
Now, are your parents just, I mean, obviously they'll tell you what's going on, but they must be pretty used to this stuff by now.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty used to it. They still get, you know, excited about telling me and letting me know and going through stuff like that. And it's what I find is really funny. If I look back from when I was a little kid, when we were absolutely not allowed to talk about it at all, to people who visit my mom and she'll go, oh, have you read my son's book? And it's got stories about this house. And it's just,
That's cool.
It's a complete flip around, which is awesome.
That's really neat. That is so cool that they embrace it now. And yeah. I guess it's nice that if there are lulls and things, you just, they get that break. And then when it's certain times of the year, they're like, okay, here we go again. Let's see what goes down.
Right. Exactly. So.
Well, let's jump into some of these stories, John. And as I mentioned, some are very difficult to classify. And this very first one that I chose is very much in that category. And this is titled The Time Traveling Dog.
Mm-hmm. So The Time Traveling Dog, this is by Josie. And I found Josie and her story through a friend of mine who she is also friends with Josie. And she said, you know, she knew I collect stories, and she goes, you know, you've got to talk to my friend. She's got a really strange story. And I said, okay, you know, I'd love to. And I finally was able to track her down and convince her to tell me her story. I did have to change her name. She is a little, you know, weirded out by it. But when I talked to her, she's like, now this doesn't have to do with ghosts or anything like that, but it's definitely strange, and it kind of took a little bit for her to explain. And I said, well, why don't you just tell me the story? And so she explained that she grew up in Idaho in a small rural community, and her family wasn't, you know, very well off. They weren't, you know, without food or anything, but they had to do different things to, you know, make enough money for the family to keep going. And when she was turning 10, she knew they didn't have a lot of money, but she really wanted a dog. That was what she wanted more than anything. And she wasn't even sure if she would get the dog or not, because, you know, she didn't know if they would be able to find one. Or, and she came home from school, she said, and she was so excited. Her parents had found a little puppy. It was a collie Labrador mix, and she named the dog Sammy, and really smart dog. And she was able to teach it some tricks. She got it right before July, and July she spent, you know, the whole summer playing with her dog and teaching Sammy to shake and speak and sit and all of these things. And come August and around fall time, her parents, one of the things that they always had to do as a family is go get wood in the mountains, because they heated their home with a wood burning stove to help save money. So, and the whole family had to go. They would go on a Saturday and cut wood. So they went up as a family, and she took Sammy with, and her job was to, you know, help load and knock limbs off. And so for the first little while her dad and brothers were chopping down trees and with the chainsaw and getting ready, she was playing with the dog. And the dog didn't get too far from her the whole time in the morning while she was playing. And then she started working and helping load the truck. And around 2 o'clock, she noticed that Sammy was missing. And so she started looking around and going through, you know, the forest and everything, and she couldn't find the dog, and she was in tears, and she made everybody stop working, and they went and basically looked for Sammy until dark, and they couldn't find the dog anywhere. And she just said she was in just so upset. The next day, which was Sunday, she convinced her dad to go up and help look again. And so her and her dad went up, and even Sunday, they spent all morning looking for any sign of the dog or anything and couldn't find anything. And she was devastated. Her dad explained to her that, you know, in the mountains, there are coyotes and there's, you know, all kinds of creatures, and something must have gotten a hold of Sammy, and she was really upset. And her parents were going to get her another dog. She didn't want another dog. She was, you know, just heartbroken, as you can imagine. Well, you jump forward 5 years. She's 15 years old. She never did get another dog. She didn't want another dog. And she was going to school. And for those years, she had convinced her parents not to make her go get wood in the mountains because of the traumatic experience, she said, of losing her dog up there. And finally, when she was 15, it was just her and her dad and her brother who could go up. So her dad made her go up to get wood that year in the fall. And when they got up there, she realized it was the exact same area where they had lost Sammy. And she was a little bummed, but they got out and started working. And After a little while, about an hour, she was waiting for her turn to start loading the wood. And she was just walking around the truck and walking down the road a little bit. And all of a sudden she said, and I've got to mention at this point in the story, she's telling me this and she stops and she goes, "I want you to know I'm not crazy. This really happened." She says, "I understand how it sounds, but it really did happen exactly like this." But up the road comes a dog. And she looks and it looks just like Sammy did. She said, I guess I should mention here that she had a part of the reason she named the dog Sammy, the little female dog, is it had an S on its chest in its pattern on its chest was like an S kind of thing. And the dog looked just like Sammy. And she called it over and it came over and she looked at its collar and it was Sammy. It had the red collar she had bought the dog. It had the dog's name, her address on the back. And she was kind of in shock because it looked like the dog hadn't aged at all. And she told the dog to sit and it did and shake her hand. And she just scooped the dog up and started bawling. And before long, you know, her dad had been calling her and didn't know where she was. And he came around with her brother and they're like, "What are you doing?" And she goes, "Look, it's Sammy." And they're like, "That can't be Sammy." And her dad looks over the dog and he's like, "You know, this just got to be a coincidence, something really strange." And so she wouldn't even help load the truck. She said she wouldn't let go of the dog. She just held him in the truck the whole time, the dog. And when they got home, she showed her mother, and her mother wouldn't believe her. And so they took the dog to the vet. Her mother told her, said, "Now, don't tell the vet anything about the dog. We're just going to get a checkup." And the vet looked over the dog and did a checkup and said, "Yeah, you know, you've got about a four and a half month old puppy. You know, she's almost filled out. She'll be a little bit bigger than this, but she's about the same size she will be." And they left and she said, "See, Mom, it is Sammy." And the whole family was in disbelief because the dog hadn't aged at all in 5 years. And it just showed back up almost as if it had walked through, you know, a time porthole or whatever you want to call it. And Josie said that she'd had one or two ghost experiences or anything like this, but this made her really think that there was, you know, something else going on in the world, and she couldn't explain it. She said she had the dog for another, I think she said 13 years, and it died of old age. And so, yeah, that's definitely one of those stories that it's kind of heartwarming. It's kind of weird. But like you say, how do you classify that? Because it's something that I've never heard of before, having an animal disappear and then come back and it hasn't aged in 5 years. That's really strange.
I love this one because it was so unique. And yeah, how do you even begin to unravel that? I couldn't. So I was like, oh, I have to have John cover this one because it was so unique.
Yeah, it's really strange, but it's one of my favorite ones for sure. But yeah, it's definitely strange. It makes you wonder. Again, it happened in the mountains, and we know there's a lot of strange things that go on in the yeah. mountains. So you just never know. So I did feel she was very genuine about her story, and you know, she was really very genuine about what had happened. So.
Well, it's just so odd because you get the dog with the same markings and then you're like, okay, well, maybe it's a coincidence, but then the collar, and then they take it to the vet and the vet says, oh yeah, healthy little puppy here, about 4 months old. You're like, what? That was highly unexpected. Love that story.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next up, we are going to, in fact, talk about the one that I was like, nope, when I saw the wonderful illustration of said entity. And that is, of course, the water baby.
Right. So this one story is by Brianne, and I met her through somebody else as well. I was down at a small town a couple years ago, talking about my books at a little convention kind of place. It was really small, but I was able to talk about my books and talk about some of the folklore. And afterwards, whenever you do, you know, talk at any of these places, you always inevitably get a couple people that come up to you and start talking to you and want to share their stories, which is great. It's a great place to contact people who have had experiences. And one of them, this lady came up to me and she says, you know, have you ever heard of the water babies? And I said, yeah, I have. And we talked a little bit about how, you know, in Utah folklore with the Native American folklore, there are these creatures called water babies. Now, they have a name, and I always slaughter it when I try and say it because it's a Native American name, but it's in fact, I'm not even going to try how to say it, but essentially it translates into water babies. And this lady said, you know, you really should contact my friend. She had an experience with one. And I was really excited because I'd read a lot about them, but I'd never heard of or met somebody who had in particular ran into one themselves. So after hunting down a little while, I was able to meet Brianne and interview her on the phone. In her story, she grew up in Montana, moved to Utah to go to school, and met her husband here, stayed in Utah down near Salt Lake area. But again, she, you know, like a lot of people that I meet, they love to spend a lot of time in the mountains and hiking. And this was in the early 80s when things weren't quite as crowded as they are now in the mountains. And they would spend the weekends hiking and camping, and they went into the Uintas and they picked a place, just a small out of the way place. It was called Notch Lake is what she remembered it being called. And they hiked in and they set up camp, and before they get their fire going, the rain started. So they just sat in the tent and they had a cold dinner and then talked and went to bed and fell asleep. They were about 100, 200 yards at the most from the lake, not too far from the lake. And she woke up in the middle of the night, the first night, and she could hear something crying. It was a really strange sound that she could hear coming from the lake. And she sat there listening to it, and she nudged her husband awake to ask him. And as he woke up, it kind of went a little bit and then died off. And she said, did you hear that? And he goes, yeah. And she says, what is that? And he thought it was just a mountain lion. He didn't get a good, you know, get to hear it for very long. And he's like, oh, it's probably just a mountain lion or something like that. And she didn't think so because she'd never heard that sound before. And it was really strange. And he fell back to sleep immediately. She listened for a while longer. She did notice that all the other sounds of the forest had died off while this crying was going on coming from the lake. But eventually, you know, the sounds started coming back to the forest, and she fell back asleep. The next day they had breakfast, they hiked around the lake, they did their hiking and just spent the whole day up there. And that night they had their dinner, went to bed, and again she got woken up in the middle of the night from this crying sound that's coming from the lake. And her husband was woken up by the same sound too. And she's like, what is that? You know? And he goes, I have no idea. And so he gets up and puts his boots on, and she's like, where are you going? And he's like, I'm going to go find out what that is. And she's like, and he goes, you can stay here alone or you can come with me. And she was really scared. It was kind of a strange, really strange sound. So she followed him. And they had an old flashlight that didn't work really good, but they could see well enough. They didn't turn the flashlight on at first. And they make their way down to the little lake. It's not a real big lake. But and she says that, you know, sitting on a rock, partly on the water and partly on the rock, is this creature that she can see. And it's crying almost like a baby. And she said it was about the size of a 3 or 4 year old child. It had dark green skin and shaggy black gross hair that covered its head. When they flipped on the flashlight and shined it on the creature, it had really big eyes that reflected the light of the flashlight really well. And it stopped crying as soon as they did it, and they got a good look at it with it's just kind of dark skin and you know, creepy features. And then it, with a splash, it was gone in the water and gone again. And they hurried back to camp and tried to spend the night, and eventually they just got out and left. But it was really, she said it was just a surreal experience to see this creature. And later on, you know, she read and tried to find out about it. And these creatures, like I say, this is the only person that I've found that's a first-person account of this, but there's folklore and stories that go back way back to the first pioneers that came to Utah and through the Native Americans of these water babies that will. It's said that they stay by the water. They will cry like a baby to attract people to them and then pull them in the water to drown them. They will also appear supposedly almost like mermaids, like a freshwater mermaid, where they also will appear as a woman in distress to try and lure young men to the water and pull them in and drown them. But I just found that really kind of creepy and awesome story. I really love that one.
Did they hightail it out of there before daylight, or do they camp there anymore?
I think they left fairly quickly after that. Yeah, I don't
Yeah.
I they got right out of there. It was it was one of those situations where you just you don't want to stay in the area, that's for sure. So
There's so much nope going on there.
yeah.
Because to be honest, and this is something that, as you know, John, will come up a lot of times with people out, Bigfooting and all of that kind of stuff, is hearing baby cries or playing baby cries to get a Bigfoot to come in, which we, as we know, also has sometimes worked, for
Right.
better or for worse. So it's just as creepy to wake up and hear a baby cry. I've said even that alone would be really terrifying. As and you mentioned this, that sometimes a cougar, mountain lion can also mimic something like that, crying or screaming. But then to actually find what was making that noise, and that's what it looks like, that is the biggest bag of nope I can even think of.
Right.
What's interesting though to me is that, this is supposed to be a creature of legend and folklore and myth, but it has these massive eyes that are, something that happens to, if we're talking about a quote unquote regular animal on, here on Earth that we know and is labeled, it has these eyes that are built for nighttime business. Like it's been evolved like that.
Right, exactly. And that's what I find really fascinating about Native American folklore when they're talking about creatures like this, is because a lot of times you'll talk to them and your question will be, is this a flesh and blood creature or is this a spiritual creature? And their answer is yes, it's both. It kind
Right.
of goes into both realms. And a lot of people have a hard time understanding that. And it's hard to wrap your mind around that. But I love the fact that in a lot of ways, they're so intertwined that that's same with Bigfoot and same with a lot of creatures like that the spiritual and the physical is just so intertwined that it's the same thing in their eyes. So yeah, I definitely found that fascinating that it had eyes in it and it kind of reflected the light of the
Yeah.
flashlight. That
Right.
kind of detail is it really helps with the story and helps you believe, that they really had this experience.
The stories of, much like the mermaids, they lure them in, whoever their victim is, they pull them under the water, and you're kind of going, oh gosh, with this thing, with this water baby, then is that really what it's eating? Where does it go during the day and what does it eat? What does it
Right.
do? It's just
Right.
such a creepy story. Love, love, love that one. Now, this next one, I think this would actually be pretty cool to experience and see. Maybe not way deep in the woods and alone and all of that, but the idea of basically a dire wolf. Woof,
Right.
woof. There I go. I had to pick one that said woof. But this one, it would be really humbling to experience, I think. And this one was titled Monster Woof.
So this one was by Alex and Steph. They contacted me after one of my books, contacted me through my website, and I was able to meet and over Skype and talk to them. They had a really interesting experience back in the 70s when they were going to school in the Midwest. They spent a lot of time traveling and camping and just going, they would go everywhere. They had a little Volkswagen bus that they would travel in, the two of them. And they said they had an experience. They were in the Black Hills of South Dakota, just traveling to see, you know, the country. And they stopped outside of a little place called Silver City. I'm not sure if it's the big Silver City, because there's actually, I was looking after I interviewed them to kind of pin down, and there's a lot of different places called Silver City, so it's hard to say exactly where it was. But they were outside of the town in the mountains, and they pulled off the road, off down a ways into the trees to find a place just to camp the night. And so they went on a little hike to begin with, and up the little draw canyon, whatever, from their campsite, they came across a flat, big flat rock that had different things on it. It almost looked like an altar, I guess you could say. It had clothes that had been bundled and tied, small animal bones that had been laid out a specific way. There was an old bone handle knife, and they were looking at it, and her husband, or so Alex, bent down to pick it up, and Steph told him not to touch it, you know, don't do that. And just a really creepy feeling that came over when they found that in that area. And she kind of wanted to move further down to camp somewhere else, but he kind of convinced her to stay, that it'd be okay. They went back to camp. They built up the fire. They had dinner. And she said there was just a really creepy feeling for a long time that she was having trouble getting rid of. And it finally went away, and they were sitting by the fire and just enjoying the evening. And all of a sudden, almost like a wind, she said, that came down the canyon, this horrible feeling of creepiness just came over the camp. And all of a sudden, they could hear back in the woods some rhythmic drums and chanting, and, you know, almost like Native American chanting is what she explained it as. And the feeling got creepier and creepier, and she wanted to leave, and they were hoping it would pass. And all of a sudden, on the other side of the fire from them, out of the trees, steps this wolf. And she said it was enormous. It was almost 4 feet tall at the shoulder, and jet black, and its eyes were glowing. She said whether it was from the firelight or whether it was glowing from an unworldly thing, she didn't know. She said that, you know, she let out a scream and jumped up, and her husband grabbed her by the arm so that she wouldn't run, because he knew that, you know, whatever creature it is, if you run from it, it triggers a response to chase. And so as they watched, the first thing she noticed is it started to growl, but it wasn't just a growl. She said that from across the other side of the fire and everything, she could feel the reverberation in her chest. It was just so deep and so loud. And it kind of paced on the other side of the fire from them and then slipped back into the... Her husband tried to yell and scare it off, but absolutely nothing would scare it off. And it finally just walked off and back into the woods and disappeared. And they put out the fire and drove off as quick as they could. They said it was not just seeing a wolf, but seeing something this large. I mean, it was just enormous. And the whole thing with the altar and the feeling and the chanting, it was all connected somehow. So that was their story. They were really, you know, really freaked out by it, which I can only imagine, seeing something that large and having that experience would just scare you to death. So,
yeah, I think that's kind of one of those things where you come across a sight like that in the woods, you leave it the heck alone. You don't touch a thing. Nothing.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, the fact that it came down, I don't like the fact that there was a wind. You know, she noted that there was a wind, and then this massive creature, you know, breaks through the wood line. And then it really seemed pretty aggressive, like it was kind of pacing, like you said, and kind of going, hey, you guys are not welcome here, and you need to scoot on out. And seems like they certainly got the message.
Right. Yep. Whatever it was. And again, you know, I kind of went back and forth after meeting with them and taking down the story of what exactly it was. Is it some sort of skinwalker thing where, you know, it's a Native American skinwalker? Is it cryptid? You know, what exactly is it? A combination? It's again, kind of hard to pin down
right. What
exactly the connection was between all of it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of a flesh and blood, basically like a direwolf from the Game of Thrones, is an interesting idea. But, I mean,
right. You
would think that it would be pretty tough to hide something like that. But then again,
yeah. Same
thing with Bigfoot. You know, those guys get massive, too, and we can't seem to prove those are out there. So
exactly.
Like you said, they're all kind of lumped in there together.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but definitely a strange situation.
And the creepy feelings definitely seems to be something that, I don't know if that's primeval in us or if that comes from, you know, whatever it is they're about to see. They just can't help but give off that vibe. You know, I don't know what side of that is, or maybe it's a little bit of both, but there always does seem to be some kind of a warning in a lot of these stories.
Yeah, it does. Definitely. People, even people who aren't necessarily in tune, can feel that vibe when you get in a situation like that, where it's just insanely crazy and there's something there that wants you to leave, or, you know, wants to do you harm, kind of a thing.
There was no sparkly vampire standing next to that massive woman.
No, not that she mentioned. So
I had to, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
all right. So next we're going to move to this story. Another very interesting one. Hard to classify here, guys. The Little Old Man.
Yes, and I love this story too. Jay was one that contacted me again through my website, and I was excited to get this story because, just like you, we've heard all kinds of stories about the Superstition Mountains and the folklore and this everything that goes on there. And Jay had a story. He grew up outside of Flagstaff, Arizona, and when he was around 12 years old, he would go hiking with his dad. His sister and him would go hiking a lot with his dad. And they went just outside of, or I guess just towards the north of the Superstition Mountains. They wanted to do a day hike. And they've done it before, not in this area before, but they'd been out in the desert before. And, you know, just like you're aware, living in the desert, you kind of got to do that in the morning before it gets too hot, and you got to do it in off season, not during the hottest part of the year. So they went in the off season and started on this hike, and they went up about three or four miles. They started, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning early. They got up to where they wanted to kind of stop, and his dad had stopped. They were having a little lunch and just a little break. And he asked his dad, you know, being a 12-year-old boy, can I go, you know, look around? Can I explore? And his dad's like, sure, but, you know, we're going to leave in like 20 minutes, so don't go very far. And so he started going around, and he saw a lizard, and he started chasing it and trying to catch it. And it makes its way through this brush and through these rocks. And he follows the, you know, through where the lizard went. And he squeezes kind of through into this opening of rocks. And sitting on this big rock in this kind of round area that's enclosed is a little old man. And he said, you know, at first I thought I'd maybe found a corpse, because he was just sitting with his eyes closed and tattered pants, kind of grayish off-colored skin, kind of a scraggly beard, no hair, very little. And his eyes were closed, and he kind of gave a gasp at first from seeing this. And the little old man, he opened his eyes. And at this point, he's realizing it's not just a little person, but it's like he's really little. He would only be 3 or 4 feet tall if he stood up off the rock. And he's kind of obviously in shock coming across this. And the guy's sitting there on the rock. He's got a walking staff in one hand, and the other hand is sitting free. And he goes to scream, you know, for his dad. And just as he does this, this little guy holds his hand up and stops him from screaming. And the little guy puts his finger to his lips and you know, does the whole, you know, shh thing really loud at him, and he can see through this. The old guy doesn't have any teeth, and he finally kind of snaps out, you know, comes to his senses and runs back out the way he came, and runs to his dad. He's in tears. He's upset. The whole thing, you know, he talked about how just, again, the vibe when in there was off-putting and creepy, and to find this guy up there in the middle of nowhere, looking the way he did, like, just like he'd been there forever. So he, you know, through tears, explains to his dad what's going on, and his dad walks down with him, and his dad has to really squeeze in through the rocks to get in there, to this opening. And when they get in there, he's gone. There's no little guy there. There's no footprints. There's no sign that he was ever there. And they slowly, you know, they look around. You know, he stayed with his dad the whole time. He said he wouldn't leave his dad's side. They looked around to see if there was somebody around, couldn't find anything. And, they walked out, and he said he like basically held his dad's hand the whole way out. He was just frightened to death of what it was that, whatever it was that he had found up there and what he had seen. I just thought this was really an interesting story, not just because, you know, it's not an everyday occurrence to run into a strange, you know, creature like this out there, but also, I'm just wondering, you know, to this day, I'm trying to puzzle of what it was. He said it didn't seem like an apparition because it seemed very flesh and blood and not see-through whatsoever. So it makes you wonder if it was one of the Fae, small, you know, little, you know, small creatures that they talk about throughout history and what people run into sometime, or was it an apparition? It's hard to pin down, again, exactly what it was that he came across.
The idea of these quote unquote little people in the forest, even just in the U.S., is fascinating to me. And especially his look. I mean, the whole, he thought he came across a corpse, and it's these one-offs that are just so wholly different than, you know, the classic haunted house stories or something like that. And that's not taking away from those at all. It's just, these are so powerful as a one-off. And I'll bet you that Jay, I don't know how many years it was when it happened to when he told this to you, but I bet he probably thinks about this once a week. Or if he sees, you know, some kind of skinnier guy or something, it reminds him. Or, you know, anytime the Superstition Mountains comes up, how could he not think about this? I mean, this is actually a pretty terrifying thing to see if you're a little kid and you're really standing there face to face by yourself, and then it shushes you. In the world?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I always find it fascinating too, when I come across a story like this and I get to interview somebody, because it's amazing to me that if you go back through, you know, history and everything like that, you'll find connections that all these cultures that were so far away from each other, whether it's Native American and Eastern European, or even in African, South American, they have different names for the same creatures that they saw. They saw the exact same creatures. They may have had different names for them, but it's amazing how all the way across the world throughout time, these same creatures seem to show up in stories and in everything, and they collaborate with each other, even though there's no way that they could know anything about each other. Right. And it's the same with now, you know, for instance, you know, Jay had never heard that there were, you know, when he thought of leprechauns or whatever, he thinks of old world Disney movies or, you know, stuff like that. He doesn't realize that there are actually people who see things like this on occasion. So
it probably made him feel comforted to know that he wasn't alone, right? I mean, it's a crazy story, but he's not crazy. You know, if he really felt like he saw that. Did it ever come up that, you know, did he feel like the lizard turned into the old man, like a shapeshifter kind of situation? Or, I mean,
No, he didn't mention anything like that. Mostly, he just felt like it was coincidence that he got let in there. He didn't feel like he had been let in there for any reason in particular. At least that's how he felt. But that would not surprise me either if it was the lizard that had drawn him in there, whatever it was. So
right, there's already a tiny, skinny corpse, like 3 to 4 foot tall man back there. So it wouldn't be that right. crazy to think that it was right. the lizard to begin with.
Right.
I mean, exactly. Nothing's out of the realm of possibility with what we talk about. Yep. So no, thank you so much, John. And are you okay to stick around here for a little bit longer and share some more stories for the Patreons only?
Yep, I'd love to share with those guys.
Awesome. So. Well, before we do that, go ahead and let everybody else know before we tune off on that side. You know, give them your email address. I know you're still collecting for your next book. Let them know where to find, of course, the four that are out now and how to contact you.
Yeah, so you can contact me through my website, strangerbridgerland.com. It's all, you know, one word, www. And you can contact me through that. All of my books are available on Amazon for Kindle and softback. And currently, Stranger Bridgerland is available on Audible and will not be more than a month or two. And then the rest of the books will be available on Audible as well. So look for those.
That is awesome. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
Now, do you want people to contact you right through the website? Is that probably the easiest thing?
Yeah, so it has a section right there to fill out, and my email is also on there as well. You can jot that down as well. It's OlsenJ243, OlsenJ243@gmail.com. That's my email if you want to contact me that way as well. That'd be great.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, John. I look forward to having you on ITF for the next upcoming book. Everybody send your stories to John because they become really creepy, wonderful, perfect collection. So, well, everybody on Patreon, stay tuned. We've got John still coming up. So head on over to Patreon and get that extra episode. Well, you and Annie and all the kitties, including the new kitten, you guys have a good night out there in Utah.
All right. Thanks, Shannon.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little fire. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our ignorance. Consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. that after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you're being reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.